All right, so tell us how you're going to enjoy the good weather if you are. What are you going doing? Have you got a boat? Are you going to go out kayaking? Are you going to have a barbecue? If you've got the barbecue out right now, I'm looking forward to all the barbecue pictures coming up on social media. So tell us what you're going to do if you have the time and the health for it to enjoy the good weather over the next week or so, just to keep us all a bit uplifted. We probably will be bringing on some sort of a barbecuing expert. I think it's that time of the year, isn't it? Wouldn't we like to do stuff that's a little bit different just to the burgers and sausages? No harm in that. And some of you out there, of course, really go to town on it. But we might get an expert on just to see if there's any wee hints and tips that we could be employing. But anyway, just get in touch with us. 086 60 25 000. WhatsApp and text that number. Tell us your good news, or if you're going to do something nice for the next few days, or whatever it might be. Or give us a call on 074 91 25 000, because this life is light and shade, and we want to experience both, don't we? Right, okay, let us get to some of your comments here. Hi, Greg, you looked well last night. Watched online. Say hello and well done to Miss Earth Leila Doherty, one of the nicest people you could meet, from Elaine and Paul in Clonmany. Well, two things. Firstly, thank you very much indeed. I did make an effort because we were told to, you know, dress up. And I have to say, if anyone's interested in fashion, they would have loved last night, because everyone was done up to the nines. I tried my bit, a Dugganall suit out of the back of the cupboard. Thank you. But secondly, say hello and well done to Miss Earth Leila Doherty. I will, between 11 and 12. Is she in studio or on Zoom, Caroline? Caroline's on a call here. I'm chatting to Leila later. So I don't know if she's coming in or if she's going to join us remotely. But either way, we want to celebrate success, as we always do here. A patient was sent from Letterkenny Hospital to Galway to get stints in. He left Letterkenny Hospital at 4 a.m. in the morning. When he arrived in Galway, the surgeon examined him and he had a pacemaker in. So they could do nothing with him. Sent him back to Letterkenny. Not ideal. Diagnostics can't hire. Two locum consultants started there in October. They've both left due to the workload. The last permanent consultant was hired in that department in 2012, I think, despite advertising permanent posts. Now, I'm not sure if it's as far back as 2012, but in terms of the consultants that have departed, we covered that extensively on the programme last week. Good morning. Water is off in the Manor Cunningham area on Friday. Low water pressure today. This seems to be happening quite often. So there's problems with water right across the county, it seems. How long is it before we start talking about a hose pipe ban? Not a hose pipe ban, but you know what I mean, water restrictions. We have very little capacity, it seems, when it doesn't rain. And it hasn't rained significantly for quite some time. There was a bit of a misty rain over the weekend. And there is zero rain, effectively, bar the odd shower forecast, for at least the next week. Could we be heading in that direction really quite soon? Right, okay. Where are we here? I don't know what that's in relation to. I'll come back to that. That's some comments from social media. I'll just get some context for that in a minute. Can I just say a massive thank you to Highland Radio and my lovely customers on the award I received? I'm still in shock and so, so grateful. It was an amazing night. Can you put this in as a request, please? Yes, but who are you? If you're going to say you won an award, plug your business, for crying out loud. Anyone want to congratulate or whatever from the awards last night, get in, but mention your business. That's marketing 101. Get back in to me and I'll read that out for you again. All in Master Shoe in Ballybuffet, especially Caroline, Marie and Kathleen, well done on your award last night. And they're celebrating 40 years open in June for Mary and Alison, all the O'Donnells. Well done, Master Shoe. Some brilliant businesses recognised yesterday. And it was their customers primarily that wanted to thank them for their great service. And then, of course, we had brilliant judges. And a special mention to Noel Cunningham, too. They were all fantastic. But Noel, as is the way with Noel, really got into the spirit of things as well, which was great. Right, OK. I'm going to take a break for the bingo numbers. Stay where you are, because our next guest is on the way. As I mentioned, we have Brendan Devaney in after 11. He's going to preview the DL debate, reflect on the weekend sport. We've got Miss Earth, Leila Doherty, joining us. She's going to join us remotely. Lisa Hone's going to be joining us very shortly too. And we have a special feature too on defective concrete in Europe. That's coming up all a little later on in the show. So it's a busy one. But as I say, keep in texting us about what you're going to do over the next wee while. If you're going to get the barbecue out, maybe fire up your cozy spot. I don't know, whatever it might be. But we want to know what you're doing to enjoy this good weather over the next few days. Right, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Lisa Hone is the chairperson of the Mica Action Group and joins us now. Lisa, thank you very much for taking the time out today. How are you keeping?
Okay, fairly busy as usual.
Yes, I can imagine. Still on the roller coasters. Yeah, right. Can I start off by saying, and I don't mean this disparaging or with any criticism to the campaign, but in terms of the scheme, the enhanced scheme, and what it will deliver, and also to what the aims of the MicroAction Group has been from the get-go. Are we waving the white flag on that now? Are we saying that despite our best efforts, despite all the engagement that's happened, that too many people are going to be left behind through this enhanced scheme, and too many people are going to have to try and get money together that they simply don't have? And as I say, I know it sort of feels like a negative tone to start off on, but is that really where we're at, do you think, Lisa?
I think where we're at, Greg, is that the revised scheme is the revised scheme, and that is what is going to land. It could be even this week in terms of implementation, in terms of what we're hearing on the grapevine. Don't have anything in writing. But we have tried unrelentingly over years, obviously not just myself personally, but obviously predecessors to that. And you know, a huge amount of energy and effort. And, you know, we have gone at this every possible way we can do. And, you know, like this, you know, credit should be given for the amount of energy and effort and intelligent people who have put very solid, reasoned arguments in front of government. But effectively, what we're faced with is a government that stonewalls those arguments. And I think the duty is now is to almost, you know, we're at the point where the new scheme is going to be coming in, and you have to sort of take stock of where we're at. Mm.
Okay, you're muted there. Sorry, Lisa.
Forward.
Yeah, okay, we'll get to that, and I don't want to ruin your flow, but I just want to focus on where we're at in terms of the engagement with the government. Or maybe try and get an insight into the way that, well, when I say the government, it's, you know, it's the civil service of thinking here, really, I think. Like, why will they not take on board logical proposals like penalty-free downsizing, for an example? And because of the amount of money we're talking here, we're talking multi-annual, multi-billion that can't be costed, really. We don't, and you know, say for instance, the new scheme is announced shortly. We're going to see a whole load of new properties come in to play, I think, because people will be able to get their houses tested. I know people are waiting for that so they can get their houses tested more cheaply. So we're going to get a real extent, I think, an idea of the extent of the problem, though we know that already. But what I don't understand is, particularly given how the government and the civil service have dealt with other schemes, why they are not acceding to common sense approaches here. This, it would cost them nothing extra to reform this scheme to make it more inclusive, and the PR would be amazing. So I can't understand why homeowners here and elsewhere now are being shafted in this way. There's nothing in it for the civil service or government to do it, because let's be honest, this is going to be going on for 10, 15, 20 years, if not more.
No, it's extremely frustrating, Greg, because we have put forward, you know, like you say, the zero cost option, so the penalty-free downsizing, the transfer of eligibility, and also what we call side-by-side building, where people would have the space. And it's just literally a different, slightly different order of works. We're not actually asking for any more money, but we just get this stonewall approach. It's like, it is really difficult to explain why they will not accept it. Like, for example, with the penalty free downsizing, our understanding is that there's no legal issue with it. There is no reason not to do it. This comes down to almost political will. And I'm not sure whether we're getting into the territory where almost it's becoming just almost like a battle of wills, in that they don't want to give any more, or if those issues are taken on board, that actually generates more work for them. Because one thing that's actually quite disturbing when we got the regs is that there's obviously gaps in there where the work has not been done. Mm. That the preparation has not been done to make sure that all the strands, all the foundations, excuse the pun, to put in place this scheme to make sure it stands up with the efficiency that it needs. That work has not been done. So, like, you could be getting strained into like lots of different reasons here why they literally won't take it on board.
But the contradictions are in plain sight as well, because we have a government and the Greens within it that are aspiring to have houses built to certain standards in a very short amount of time, yet signing off on schemes that have houses built to old standards. I mean, I don't understand why this is not being exposed. I think the Business Post is doing some great work in this area, by the way. But like, it's just the obvious contradictions and. That, hold on a second, what you're saying over here is completely contradictory to what you're saying over there. So there's no joined up thinking, seemingly, in terms of the civil service, the government, and aspirations.
There is no joined up. There is a lack, there's a pure lack of logic in what is going on here now, in terms of you're pushing people down the route of having to build to pre-2008 regulations. Yet you're saying, oh, well, you might be able to apply for some sort of energy grant. It's just making the whole thing too complex, too convoluted, very, very difficult to people to actually get through that. But we all know why that was done. That was done to push the grant system back to 2008 costings with regard to materials. We all know why that was done. And there's a fundamental issue with that whole terms of reference. It doesn't include the foundations. There are, you know, it's a very, very basic build. It's quoted as saying it's a like for like. It is very, very far from a like for like in terms of the restoration of people's homes. Mm. So that was done to basically manipulate the grant figures. We know why that was, Greg. That's very, very straightforward.
But there's no advantage.
The upshot is
no advantage.
It's contradictory to government's own policy. It's contradictory to all their energy policies. So it's almost like they've kind of separated us off and kind of put it as in a special little group over here. You know, it doesn't make sense. And, you know, it doesn't make sense that you're demolishing half a semi-detached house. I mean, that's the kind of crazy we're seeing. And that's the kind of crazy we're going to see going forward, because we've got so many exclusions in terms of the way they slice and dice who can and who can't avail of any sort of access to this scheme, that we're going to see more of that, which again is totally illogical, because from an efficiency point of view, it makes no sense. From a cost point of view, it makes no sense. And you could literally have one half of the house restored and another part of it crumbling, which actually may affect the part of the house that's being restored.
But you also have government saying too much crazy going on. You've got serious senior people in government now saying that we need to move away from building houses with blocks and look at wooden alternatives, right? Could someone access this scheme and build a wooden house?
Yeah,
you can.
How you restore your house is down to you. So if you want to build a timber frame house or an ICF house, you can do that. Obviously, you're going to have to come up. You know, it's very unlikely that the grant is going to fund that. I mean, even your regular sort of block house, you know, you're going to be struggling there. But also, it's up to you in terms of how you build it back.
Thanks for that, Lisa. That's just one thing I wanted clarified in my head. But really what they're doing, though, is they are, which I don't understand. This is not anti-government, in case anyone's listening. What I'm trying to get at here is they are forcing people to build thousands and thousands of houses in a certain way that will actually limit their capability to reach their own targets in terms of efficient building. That is That's crazy. It's counterintuitive. All right. A caller says, we'll talk about other options that might be available. A caller says, engineers will not test anymore. We are in limbo. The scheme has gone backwards. When you go to the council DBS application, they're still working on the first scheme. Where do we go?
Well, they are working on the first scheme because that's the only scheme that exists. I mean, you know, we were down protesting in Dublin 2 years ago. And the reality is that as we sit here today, the only scheme that exists is the original scheme that was launched in 2020. So, yeah, that is the scheme that they're working on at the moment, because the revised scheme, it doesn't exist at the moment because it's not been implemented.
A caller says Senator Niall Blaney and Minister Charlie McConnell deserve credit for the work they've done in getting this scheme to where it is today. There appears to be no recognition for them at all. Despite the long hours they've put into this campaign, most of the issues with the scheme the minister has addressed and sorted.
Well, I have to beg to differ with the caller there. We have got issues on numerous fronts with the scheme. They have all been highlighted many times. They've been translated with case studies, with statistics, you know, all the evidence to back up exactly what is going on. So there's issues with science, there's issues with foundations, there's issues with the finances, there's issues with lack of support. We have particular concerns with regard to how people who are in any way vulnerable, fragile, or have a complex situation will actually go through this scheme. And the reason being is on twofold. The first thing is this is them finding alternative accommodation is nigh on impossible, because a lot of these people need adapted housing. That's just basic requirement, because they're dealing with conditions that require it. Mm. And that is nigh on impossible. And the other thing is just in terms of, you know, like we're, you know, like we speak to people all the time. So we for example, we would have affected homeowners. They may have been advanced age. So you've got one who person who's very ill, you've got the other maybe who's their main carer, and they are expected to go through this highly demanding and complex process. They're expected to become construction project managers. It's just not tenable. And quite honestly, the government are in la la land. You know, we've been told, well, you have your engineer and the other facilitators. And yes, they will play their part. But the reality is the engineers have multiple clients.
Yeah.
The facilitators are spread across thousands of affected families in the county. It is, they cannot have that kind of, you know, closeness, holding hand. You know, I mean, effectively, you need an end-to-end scheme. Mm. You just need to take that burden off people and give them the end-to-end scheme. Find them somewhere to live for a year or however long it takes to restore their homes. Take that burden away from them. It is just unrealistic what the government is asking people to do, especially those who are the most vulnerable in our society. And that is just plain wrong.
Yeah, and there's many people with larger houses that work very hard to build larger houses. This is completely useless to them. Agricultural buildings, community centres, public housing, holiday homes, second homes, investment properties, whatever it might be. The list goes on and on and on and on. Now, again, then, we've got to the point whereby the MICA Action Group, through yourself, has met with Coleman Legal. You've been given some insight into their case, where it's going. And you are now encouraging people to consider joining the action being brought through the courts by Coleman Legal, which is underwritten by Defective Blocks Ireland. And that's really where I came from with the opening line here in that, are we giving up on the scheme altogether? Now, not everyone can join. Can they? This action by Coleman Legal. So again, even if everyone decided to go down this route, that could, it still leaves people behind.
Well, at the moment, they're saying that they don't have an upper limit on the numbers.
Yes, but if you didn't get your blocks from one particular company, can you still join this action,
for an example? Yeah, you can still join. I mean, me, for example, I don't know ultimately. There's a lot of people in the county where we don't know where our blocks came from because we didn't physically build the house ourselves. We didn't have the receipts.
Understood.
So absolutely, you can still join up. And also, if you're in Northern Ireland and you think you're affected by this, you can also join up. So my advice would be, if you are interested in this, I think from our perspective, given where we are in terms of taking stock in terms of what the scheme, how the scheme is going to land, I think the obligation is that all those are affected are aware of all the options going forward. And I think that's really what I want to do is ultimately it is the homeowner's own decision on whether they decide to enter this process or not. They you know, they need to equate themselves with the details of it and understand the process thoroughly. They can go onto Coleman Legal website and have a look there. And there are facilitators who will help them understand it. But I think our obligation as an organisation that represents those who are affected is just to make sure that everybody is aware of the options going forward. Because, you know, we have to just be honest with people in terms of where we are. And you know, I want to sort of give people a very sort of straight talking, plain, unvarnished view of where we are. I don't want them to have any illusions. It's hard when I can't bring people better news. That is one of the really tough parts about being involved in this campaign, is not being able to always give people the news that they want. But, you know, the obligation, I think, on myself and Mag is to make sure that people understand the situation very clearly as it is, and also understand that if there are other options that they would like to have a look at, to just make them aware of that.
Right,
and that's
so
why we've made this statement.
You can't answer this question with any level of certainty, I would imagine, but I'm going to ask it anyway, just till we get an idea or get a sense, and it's non-committal, not holding you to it. But in reality, if you had to guess, how many of the affected homeowners could avail of the enhanced scheme without having to go and get a loan or without having to dig into any resources they have? In other words, what percentage of people would you guess this would actually be a 100% redress scheme for?
Well, in short, Greg, the number would be very low, I would say. Mm. Or if you're talking about 100% redress, the way the terms of reference are written, it's almost impossible for anybody to avail of that like for like, because the way, you know, it's going back to that the points we were making earlier. So effectively, they have, the Department of Housing have written the terms of reference, pushing people into pre-2008 regulations, and it recognises nothing in terms of the investment that people have put in their homes. So if you're talking 100% true redress, you are talking about the 100% full restoration of all your losses. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't cover that.
Okay.
So it's nigh on impossible for people to get themselves back to that state,
yeah,
given that if you've been in your house for the last 15, 20 years, the reality is you've probably invested in that house as the years have gone on. Mm-hmm. And the scheme as it sits, given it's a basic build to 2008 standards, you know, that's not going to cut it in terms of like for like.
Yeah.
And also, we also know that there's other buildings and structures that are affected. So, for example, garages, walls, you know, septic tanks, none of that is in the
foundations
scheme. So that automatically,
concrete,
you know,
driveways. So, and again, this is not a criticism or an assessment, Lisa, but then effectively, the 100% Redress No Less campaign, the Mica Action Group, this is as far as you can take it, really. This is the end, then, is it? Because if the government and its agents aren't making any further concessions, and now we have the chair of the Microaction Group saying, "Look, it's time now to consider your options through Coleman Legal," for an example. Well, then this campaign has, with the best will in the world, has achieved as much as it can. Then, you know what I mean? Well, I'm not saying it's going to be wound down, but it's end game here then, is it?
Well, I would say under this administration, Greg, there may be a change of government.
Yes.
There may be a different listening ear. If we can engage politicians in a change of government who have a genuine listening ear, who are genuinely wanting to ensure that everybody has a way forward in terms of making sure that they can fully restore their homes, then that obviously is an opportunity. That
reinvigors things. Yeah. Okay. Right. So, Ken, you had a confidential insight into the ongoing case from Coleman Legal. The word that's jumping out at me there is confidential. So, like, in what can you tell people listening that to some extent, you know, maybe they'll feel that the floor's fallen out of them because there's very little hope in this conversation we're having for people who are hoping to progress on the government scheme. I don't think that's an unfair assessment from me. So what did MICA Action Group see in this Coleman Legal case that has led to this position this Monday morning?
What I would say just about the scheme is I think that people will try and move forward on the scheme despite the issues. People are in a situation where they want to try and move forward, and if they can, they should try and mitigate their losses. However, if you know, with regard to looking to the 100% restoration, that if this is why we feel that the legal case should be taken into consideration. So please don't get the wrong impression. We're not telling people not to use the scheme. There are many people who will need to use the scheme. And, you know, it's very unfortunate that they're put in a position where they're going to have to maybe use savings, take on debt. That is not acceptable. But what we're not saying, do not use the scheme, because we recognise that people are in a situation where they will try their best to, I suppose, try and get through the best they can, because people are desperate to get to the other side of this situation. But with regard to the legal case, that is a potential opportunity in terms of people bridging the difference between what they can avail of with regard to the scheme and a true 100%. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's why people should have a look at it.
Right. So just to be clear, because I think this is a critical point, and I'm not sure if I asked Coleman Legal when we've spoken to them, if someone borrows 30,000, 40,000 euro to complement the scheme, is that refundable through this action? Or, you know, because I think that's really quite a critical point here, because do people say, right, I don't have access to that money, or I could sit tight for 3 or 4 years because my house will last that long and maybe the shortfall will be made up? Do we know through this action, because I think it's critical here, if people would be reimbursed retrospectively if they continue on the scheme until such time as there's an outcome from the legal action?
My understanding of the way the legal action works, that is, they are looking for a true 100% redress. So whatever it would take to fully restore your house as it sits at the moment, mm-hmm. What that figure would be. So there would be a gap between.
Yes, but would that would yes, of course. Offering. But my question is would that gap be addressed retrospectively? In other words, if someone puts 40 grand with the scheme, then this court case, let's say it was successful, do they get reimbursed? Because I would be sitting here listening if I was affected going, I need to know that, because I'm not going to spend the money now that I might not have to spend in 2 or 3 years. But in 2 or 3 years, if they go, right, show us the receipts for the extra and we'll reimburse you. You know what I mean? I think that's just a critical piece of information before people can really make a fully informed decision.
If it's monies that are spent to restore the house to its original condition, which is a gap between the scheme, what the scheme offers, and what you need. So to basically put your house back to what you're losing, that is the difference between what the scheme offers, yes, and the true 100% redress. So that is the difference that the likes of the legal case is pursuing. Okay, they are pursuing that, right, the difference between the actual 100% yeah, redress versus what the scheme is offering.
Okay.
So that's what they're looking for. So it is that gap. So if you had spent X thousand to actually make up the difference, to put your house back the way it was, then that is the difference. Understood. And that is what they are looking to achieve.
Right. I possibly didn't phrase the question very well there. But for now, anyway, Lisa, thank you very much for your time. Okay. That was Lisa Hone there, who is the chairperson of the MICA Action Group. 086 60 25000 WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Okay, our next guest is in studio with us. It's Father Shane Gallagher, chaplain at Letterkenny University Hospital. Father Shane, thank you so much for joining us. Morning, it's good to have you in. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Right, we're talking about Ecumenical Prayer Service of Remembrance. Tell us a little bit about what's planned.
Well, it's the first of its kind, really, Greg. You know, we decided management and chaplaincy in the hospital, we came together and we decided that we would have a service that would mark the deaths of a certain part of the public. For example, though all the patients who died in during the COVID period in the hospital and their families, you know, we very much had them in mind, because it was a time where we couldn't acknowledge anything, we couldn't have gatherings, we couldn't have anything. So the hospital now want to remedy that, and we want to put that to rights. And we want to have a time where we acknowledge that there were people who died, there were sacrifices made, and families, heartbreaking to see families down the main corridors not getting up into the wards and all that. And it was for the greater good, of course, but very, very, very difficult time. So the first section of the community we want to acknowledge is those who've died in the hospice during the COVID period and their families. And then also to past members of staff, retired members of staff of LUH, Letterkenny University Hospital, and also to active members of staff. We had a number of members of staff who died sadly during that period, who were actually working in the hospital at the time. Mm. Some sudden deaths, very tragically, and all that, and their families. It's not easy for their families now, even now these days. So
yeah, and not easy for staff either, because we know staff feel these losses personally of their patients. And also of their colleagues, you know, as well. I mean, it's a
absolutely
very personal loss, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you build a relationship with the people that you're working with. And, you know, I've often heard it said in the canteen in the hospital, people say, you know, you spend more time with the people you work with than your families. You know, statistically, I think that's the statistics. More hours in the day is spent with those that you're working with. And you build a relationship. You find out about their lives. You find out about their families. You find out, you know, you think you have things in common. Often then staff members will have social events, they'll include each other, and they'll go to each other's houses at Christmas and things like that. So you do build a life around your friends. The people become more than just colleagues, friends, loved ones, you know. And it was a very difficult period for everybody.
And many of us lost people during COVID by happenstance, all because of COVID. Some people just happened to pass away during that period. And we've talked on the programme in the past, and I've spoke to other members of the clergy, and we have a process, a well-established process here in this part of the world almost particularly, where we pay our respects and bury our dead. And for some, they weren't able to do it. And I know it added greatly to their grief, and in terms of coming to terms with what actually happened. Do you think for some then, if they attend, that maybe that will fill a gap there? I know they've probably attended Mass since, but this is particular to that period of time. And I just wonder if some might get some comfort in being able to move forward in their grief through this process.
I think grief, it affects people in different ways. Some people find a prayer service very comforting. Other people find it of no benefit at all. That can happen. Some people find it comforting just to visit the grave of their loved one, or maybe to go to therapy or talk to someone, maybe have a cup of coffee with someone. That's their way of dealing with it. There's different ways to deal with it. You know, prayer, absolutely. Prayer is a big thing too in our faith life. Prayer is one of the chief things we use to help us to overcome the death of a loved one. But a service is certainly something that is very much appreciated by the community. We recently had the prayer service for the little babies in the hospital who died, and the miscarriage service and all that. And it's amazing the feedback we got back from that from families. They said they really appreciated the work that went into it. And also we'll be having the hospice service now too on the 11th of June. I may as well plug that as well too.
Of course, yeah.
Greg, we'll use every opportunity to plug everything, you know, advertise, I say, you know. So, but, you know, this service now on the 1st of June. So just to let the listeners know, the 1st of June, 5:30, in the Church of the Irish Martyrs, is for the public. Everybody is welcome. everyone, and of all faiths and of no faith, everybody is welcome. And we'll be so happy to see people coming through the doors of the Irish Martyrs to join us in prayer and in reflection to mark the deaths of those who were very dear to us, those that we knew, those that we walked the hospital corridors with, the members of the public who died. Like, I remember one situation where I was called up to a lady who died in the early phase of the COVID period, and I won't name the lady, but I remember I was the last one to see her. Her coffin, she was in a body bag, the poor crater, and she was zipped up because she had COVID. And then she was to be put into a coffin. Her family were, one relative was in the room, and the rest of the family didn't get to see her before, you know. And for a lot of Donegal people, you know, the wake is a very therapeutic thing. So that was denied to a lot of people. The coffin went straight from the hospital then maybe into the undertaker's place, and then into the into the chapel. And there was a very, it was all over very quickly, within a heartbeat, you know.
Okay. Father Shane Gallagher, chaplain at Letterkenny University Hospital, thanks so much for calling up. Just to remind listeners that everyone's invited to the Ecumenical Prayer Service of Remembrance on Thursday, the 1st of June. That's this coming Thursday at 5:30 p.m. in the Church of the Irish Martyrs, Letterkenny.
Just also to just, can I just have one more?
Yes, take
your
time.
Yeah, one more thing. Yeah, sorry.
I'm not throwing you out the door yet. No. respect for you.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg.
But 5 minutes and you're out and you're
I'm gone. I'm gone then. I'm gone. I'm out of here. Yeah. So I just want to pay tribute to Father Chambers, Father Martin Chambers. Mm-hmm. He's now, he'll be changed to Kilmacrenan and Terman, and the people are so blessed. They're so blessed to have such a good man as their new shepherd now, please God, and he'll shepherd many souls. I want to pay tribute to
How long has Father Chambers been, church chaplain or hospital chaplain,
Roughly about, now Father Chambers may correct me on this, but I think around 17 years. Wow. It's a long time walking the corridors of the hospital.
Like others, it's a big change.
Big change in his life, it's a big change in his life. But I know, knowing Father Chambers and how capable and how good he is, I know he's going to do an A1 job. But also too, I want to welcome Father Francis Ferry too, to the hospital. He'll be joining us now in the next week or two as well too. And Father Francis is so welcome, you know. And to acknowledge too, you know, the chaplaincy team from the other faiths as well too, from Reverend Jim Lamont and Reverend Heather Holton and, you know, Kathleen Doherty. Kathleen's such a rock there too, and Heather and Jim, you know, they're so such a good group. We have a very good working group there in the hospital, and I think, you know, I think sometimes, you know, the chaplaincy team, they do such a great job, and we're not patting ourselves on the back here, but I think it's important to acknowledge that we are there and we're willing to meet anybody who comes to our door. We're so happy to see people coming, staff and patients and public. Mm-hmm. All our door is always open. And but we want to, again, just before I finish, just to reiterate what I've said, to welcome all those on Thursday evening. Now, I know traffic isn't great in Letterkenny at that time of the evening, but do come, beat your way through the traffic and come down and join us and mark the occasion just. And it'll be a very gentle service too. And please God, a lot of people will get an awful lot of good out of it. And it's the very first of its kind.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, and before I let you go, Father Shane, the eagle-eyed watchers, perhaps even listeners, will say, Father Shane looks slightly familiar. What's going on there? People who wouldn't know you. Because you, no disrespect in terms of your uniform, right?
Yes.
Okay, but your sister wears a different uniform. Hers is more blue.
Hers is more blue, yeah.
Because your sister is, of course, Garda Grania, who's a regular guest on this show as well. So.
Yeah,
and you can see a similarity between the two.
Yeah. Grania has some of my good looks, you know. So, Grania is.
I think all the good looks went that way, Father. No disrespect.
Yeah, well, just to say to you, Greg, Grania thinks the world of all of you. She thinks you're something else. She thinks you're very good. So, she enjoys her work here too, I think.
Yeah.
Not wishing to speak for her.
No. And I know Granny does an awful lot of work behind the scenes as well. So credit where it is due. Father Shane Gallagher, chaplain at Letterkenny University Hospital, thank you so much for calling up. And just once again to reiterate, Thursday, the 1st of June, everybody's invited to an ecumenical prayer service of remembrance on Thursday, as I mentioned, the 1st of June at 5:30 p.m. in the Church of the Irish Martyrs, Letterkenny. During the service, staff and former staff of LUH who have passed away will be remembered, as well as all of those who suffered personal bereavements during the COVID-19 pandemic. And last but certainly not least, foremost, in fact, almost all the patients who died in LUH during the pandemic. Father Shane, thank you so much for calling up.
Thank you for having me, Greg. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Right, okay. I'm going to get to some comments. Father Shane, you can make your way out now if you wish. I'm sure you've got other appointments to get to. Before I do actually get to those comments, I want to go to the Mayor of Letterkenny Milford Municipal District, Councillor Donal Mandy Kelly. We've been contacted by with different water issues, Donal. What have you been working on? What area of water outage have you been focused on, and what news have you got? And good morning to you, by the way.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners. Yeah, Greg, listen, I've received calls there this morning again about the water outages there in Ross Bracken and Ray Mahoney areas of Manor Cunningham. We're once again, it's an issue of bus pipes. And listen, I was chatting to several residents contacting this morning, and I contacted Irish Water. They are aware of it now, and actually, I'm actually down here now. I had a good into a meeting here in Lufford, and I stopped there along with the bus does pass, and the team is there now on the ground fixing the repairs, which is good. But I suppose the main issue is here, Greg, the residents are frustrated. This has gone on far too often, and this is three times now in the last week that the water has bust there, as recent as Friday, and again today. And I mean, it seems to be the same line. It's along the same line. It's the same issue all the time. But I suppose, Greg, on the other hand, the last time I was speaking to you, I was just coming out of a meeting with Irish Water, where I did finally get a commitment from Irish Water, where they did send an application in for funding to have this infrastructure replaced along this area of Ray Mahoney and Ross Bracken and Manor Cunningham. So, listen, it is positive. The application, I suppose, is going to have to go through its process. And listen, it's something that I am keeping a close eye on, but to ensure that it is successful and we get this repaired as soon as possible and get new infrastructure put in place, because there's no doubt in my mind, I have it in black and white, stated before from Irish Water in an email, where the infrastructure in place is outdated. It's old asbestos pipes and they're not fit for purpose. So listen, I suppose it's a good news story, as I've said, that an application has gone forward. But in the meantime, I mean, this is still happening far too often. And I suppose that's just a waiting game. We have to go through the process of the application. But listen, there's positive news to come out of it. But as I say, Greg, the team is there on the ground at the minute, and they are fixing the repair there. So hopefully water should be back up and running there as soon as possible.
All right. Listen, thanks for the update. And we do have to take the medium long-term view as well. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much indeed. Councillor Donal Mandy Kelly there, Mayor of Letterkenny Milford Municipal District. Right, let's get to some of those comments. What regulations are on the Northern Ireland block manufacturers who are delivering in Donegal? I would say stronger regulations that are actually probably enforced. Why do the banks, the government and the insurance companies not get together and sort it out that the outside skin can be replaced and the house get insurance? What's wrong with this country? Well, banks just sit in their hands and wait for their assets to be restored to full value, don't they? I feel that Donegal County Council should give the 3 million that they're adding to the funds already allocated to Dunree Fort refurbishments to the funds for the Mica people. In our lifetime, will they ever see resolution about the Mica scheme? Thank you. Listen, I appreciate the sentiment, but things have to move. Multiple things have to move at the same time. We're talking a multi-billion euro scheme here, and I don't think stalling any progress at Dunree Fort would actually materially make any difference to the lives of those who are waiting to have their houses repaired. I understand where you're coming from, but I don't see it as progress to stop progress in one area to try and progress another that it wouldn't actually work on. But as I say, the sentiment, I get it. I'm listening here now to what Lisa is saying. I've contacted Coleman and they told me, no, they weren't taking on any other suppliers. You can contact Coleman yourself and they'll tell you themselves. Caroline, can we maybe make contact with Coleman Legal? Because a listener has stated that they aren't actually taking on any clients at the moment, which I don't, that would be a problem. in terms of us advising people to contact them. So listen, I just presumed that had been agreed, or that was the case. It may well be, but I'm going to get clarity for you. Greg, I almost choked when I heard that comment about the minister and senator. As a homeowner with Micra, I felt let down by not only these two, but all the Fianna Fáil councillors. Another, if the cap is 400,000, if the government offered people 200,000 and people sorted it out themselves, I think some people would take it. Right, okay. Why are we not getting 100% same as what Dublin got for their pie, right? Well, if you can answer that one, that's the $64,000 question. Greg, the Micra payment will surely just boost economy as the new home will need built kitchens, plumbing, electrical services. It's not like a bonus payment to spend on anything other than these services and rebuilds. Again, yes, that makes an awful lot of sense, but unfortunately sense seems absent to some extent. And please ask Lisa, what is the details of the penalty-free downsizing? Well, it's not there. There's no option for that. And that was one of the calls that were made on government that made an awful lot of sense. They'd allocate the same amount of money, but a person could actually build a finished house, albeit smaller than the one they're replacing. But they said no dice.